Okay. Hello, my name is Yakub, and I'm a student moderator of this discussion forum. I would like to welcome you here at the ground of Czech Technical University at this opening discussion forum. I'm really happy that you have undergone the long way from your homes and come for this discussion forum, because what we need is you here, the students, and your ideas and opinions. Because it's the first day today and the first forum, I would like to ask you something about yesterday. How was the evening? Did you enjoy the celebratory opening, and did you get involved in the night walk in the Prague? Have you been there? Great, okay. So I hope you have enjoyed this, and I also hope that you have managed to get some sleep so you are fresh and you're ready for the discussion. So welcome one more time, have a great time here, discuss and enjoy. And now I would like to give my word to a moderator, Mr. Železný.
Thank you, Jakub. Thank you very much. My name is also Jakub. I'm Jakub Železný. I'm the moderator of Czech TV and Czech Radio, and my task today is to moderate this discussion together with my colleague, with Jakub. Let me introduce our distinguished guests, who are Mr. Jan Kassel, who is the chairman of European Democrats Party and the former mayor of Prague. Mr. Walter Bartosz is a shadow minister of education. He desires to be a real minister of education. He's a member of the parliament, and he's a member of Civic Democratic Party, which is the major opposition party here in our country. Then Mr. Petr Matějů from Sociological Institute of Academy of Sciences. A former politician as well, am I right? Yes. And last but not least, a former Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, let me say, the historically first Minister of Czech Foreign Affairs, I mean after splitting of Czechoslovakia. He was also a member of Senate, now he is a member of European Parliament. And if you want to find an expert for foreign affairs here in this country, we say, if you will find him, or if you will look for him, for some expert at noon with light, you won't find a better expert than Mr. Josef Želeněc. Did I forget anyone? No. And here is Mr. Pecháček, who is the interpreter. The acting language actually will be English. So if you don't understand, it's your fault, I'm sorry. No, if you don't understand and if you want to ask any question, you can ask a question in Czech and Mr. Pecháček will translate this question into English. European Union integration process and the student mobility, it's our today's issue. Let me ask our guests to say a few words at the very beginning. I will ask Mr. Želeněc to speak like the first speaker. Mr. Želeněc, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation. It's an honor for me to speak finally with the students, not only with the Czech voters and Czech politicians. I think that the topic of today's discussion is one of the most important for the future of not only of the European Union, but for the future of every member state. The quality of our universities, efficiency of the universities is a crucial pillar for quality and efficiency of our economy and societies as well in the future. I think that when we discuss the impact of the European integration, for that I think for that quality and consequences of that we can certainly discuss various aspects, including mobility of students, including various programs for research and education. But I would like to concentrate on the more general issue and I think more substantial issue. The integration provides us better platform for comparison, provides us also better perspective for critical understanding of not only strong but also weak points of our European system of the higher education. And I think we should realize that if we speak about European problems with development in technology, if we speak about efficiency of our research, the problem is also in the type of European higher education tradition. If we compare it with let's say American or US US tradition, you can compare not only numbers of patents, you can compare also numbers of the Nobel Prize laureates, you can compare also other indicators of efficiency of European universities, and we can see that we have substantial problem. This problem is shared by almost all European countries, new one and the old one, and we should realize that if we discuss special agendas for dynamization of the European economy, of efficiency of European research, like Lisbon agenda, we should realize that the basic problem is concentrated on the European system of higher education. I would like to say a few words. Maybe in discussion we can discuss details where I can see the crucial problems. Generally, almost all European university systems in all member states are more or less connected with the states, its initiative, its financing. The result is quite big deficit of competition. Of competition not only among universities, but among professors on the universities, among students, in fact, we can see the classical model similar here in this country, but if you go to Germany, Austria, but also most of the French universities are in the same situation. The classical academic career of a university professor is very similar to the career of a state official, with guarantees for the lifetime career from very beginning up to the pension, with very small pressures which are connected with which are necessary for efficiency. This is one problem. Second problem is lack of competition for students. Situation in our country, and again, I think it's more or less similar in other countries, that for schools, student is in fact not so crucial factor of its success, or is given, planned, and distributed by inside the state budget, and student as a client, student as a crucial focus of the effort of the school for its success. It is not the case in the European type of the higher education. Competition for money is another problem of European type of financing of higher education. Most of the budgets are automatic and are not interconnected with the performance of the school. I think that the solution is possible only outside of the system. Universities are some of the most conservative institutions in the world, and to reform universities is very difficult. What's possible is to open space for parallel world of higher education, the world of schools based on the performance, based on the effectiveness. I think it's the biggest challenge, not only for the member states, but also for the European Union, to provide this space for substantial alternative to the state type of the European higher education. Without that, we will face a bigger and bigger problem with competitiveness of not our schools, but our societies. And in the current global situation, this could be one of the worst scenarios for Europe if we are not able to give our universities a new momentum, new dynamics based on competitiveness in all these factors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zelenets. I would like to say something more about how the organization of the discussion will go on. Each of the guests will have a speech for approximately 5 minutes, and after this we'll go on with the discussion. So please write down your questions for each of the participants, or each of the guests, and we'll lead the discussion then later. I would like to give my word back to Jakub so we can go on.
Yes, we can. We can go on, and I will give the floor to Dr. Matěju. Doctor, do you want the microphone?
Or
do you have one?
Some of the microphones are here.
Thank you so much. First of all, I want to thank to the organizer for inviting me to this discussion. I remember it was this spring, I was in Luxembourg talking to about 200 students about financing higher education, and it was one of the hottest debates I ever had about this hot issue. Unfortunately, today you have chosen something, I mean, the topic which I think is important, but unless we understand how university systems really work, especially compared, I mean, European universities and American universities, we can hardly speak about mobility, because I believe, first of all, we have to start talking about compatibility. So what I would like to do today is just to draw a little bit provocative picture of the situation of European universities compared with universities in the world. So let me start my... Oh, here it is. All right, so as you can find, I talk about a crossroads we are currently staying, and we have to decide which way to go. The questions I want to open very quickly and go through is, first of all, main trends in university systems in the world. And answer the question why European universities are really lagging behind. I don't know whether you discussed this issue already with some other experts, but I think most of the data, especially OECD data, confirm the very sad information that we are lagging behind. Second, whether the European supply-driven systems, and I will explain what does it mean supply-driven system, can actually keep up with those systems which are demand-driven, that is, which respond quickly to the demand of students, to the demand for higher education. So these are the two major questions I want to very quickly to answer here. All right, so let me start with the first question, and to begin in 1960s and 1970s. We should really begin here for a very simple reason. That time, I think you remember, the biggest problem was how to open tertiary education to more than 50% of those who were eligible, that is, the age 19 to 22. And what happened, of course, United States and other countries, Canada and Australia, they really tried hard to open the system. But the real challenge of this step towards massification, as it was called that time, was the how to maintain the quality. Most of the experts said, you cannot open tertiary education for 50% of those who are eligible unless you really depress the quality. Didn't happen. Quality of tertiary education in Canada, United States, in Australia was maintained very high. And at the same time, it was opened to at least 40-45% of those who were eligible. Now, what happened now in Europe? As you know, in 1999, Europe finally opened the debate how to actually open the system and not to lose the quality. It's so-called Bologna process. What's the solution? The solution, of course, is to restructure the whole system to open a lower level of tertiary education, higher level of the tertiary education. Well, we just started. Other countries are far, far ahead. So this first 1960s, 1970s. In 1990s, what happened? The era of globalization. Everybody speaks about globalization. What does it mean for universities? It means universities, I mean those who want to be really competitive, they have to enter the whole world system of university education to become, I would say, the members of the club. It's not easy. You have to be really competitive to do that. What's the main challenge of this era? Increasing competition. Universities really have to keep up in quality, openness, financing, democratization, whatever. So this is the main challenge. What does it mean for countries like Czech Republic and small European countries? Those who really keep up export their education. So we are now, we face competition from the United States, Australia, and Canada, even here. And you will feel it soon in European countries. Export of education is something which becomes really common. What's the right response of countries which really want to compete? They should really become the members of the club, not to close themselves, not to say, well, our university system is really different and we should keep it as it is. I think our university system should be really very deeply reformed to keep up with other university systems in the world. Let's have a look at the very current situation, which is typical now by knowledge-based, the shift of societies towards knowledge-based era to innovation-driven economies, etc. What are the main trends today? Shift in the mission of universities from knowledge transfer, that is providing education, to knowledge production. Universities are really becoming centers of innovation. If they don't, they lose. They lose money, right? So I think that the main trend today is to combine teaching, research, and market orientation of universities. That is basically constituting entrepreneurial universities. Some universities in Europe did already, but it's not something which is really welcomed very often. What's the main challenge? The academics really have to change their minds. They should be good teachers, they should be good researchers, but at the same time, they should be, it's partly also entrepreneurs. Not easy task. So this is a new identity of university teachers and students as well. All right, in Europe, of course, there is a still resistance to this change, because we say our university systems are traditional, they are probably better, we want to keep as they are. Now, whether or not it is really important to follow the reform, you can find on this graph, which is taken from World Bank. What I've done here, just compare United States in the Knowledge Economy Index, Western Europe and Eastern Europe. You can find the gap between one of these, the main leaders of competitiveness, Western Europe and Eastern Europe. So this is the evidence that universities in other countries do quite well in providing, producing knowledge, producing innovation. The same picture, but just based on different statistical data, also from World Bank. Again, you see the gap between Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States. Some countries from Europe, like Finland and Germany, they do quite well, but the rest of the Europe is lagging behind again. All right. So, what does it mean when I speak about demand and supply-driven university system? I think I already emphasized that the major difference is that the demand-driven system is open to the changes necessary to provide enough opportunities for all those who want to study, and especially for what they really want to study. Supply-driven systems, as Mr. Jelen said, they very much depend on what the central authority, that is state, provide. That is money, the whole package of opportunities. So it looks like that there's a major difference between these two, because the demand-driven systems are very dynamic, because more and more young people really want to study. If they are limited by state financing, that's a problem. In this country, only 60% of those who apply are admitted, only 60%. All the others simply rejected. So I think this is one of the major differences between the two systems. Most of the European systems, as you probably know, are supply-driven systems, very limited in their financing by the center authority, which is, of course, the state. All the analyses we have done, and especially OECD has done, show that the demand-driven system show much higher, as I said, competitiveness. They are much more open, and in their dynamics, In fact, I would say this is endless dynamic as far as students want to achieve higher education. Supply demand-driven systems show also lower inequality. It's very controversial thesis, and I will, if I have time, I will document it's really true. Look at this evidence. This is expected years of tertiary education. That is, how many years on average, a person who is 17 years old can, you know, expect to study at the tertiary level. This is total expenditure on tertiary education. Of course, the more you invest, the more people can study. Look at. I have to go back this way. United States and Canada show very high investments from both public and private resources, and also the highest expectation as for the average number of years students can spend on tertiary education. Another very distinguished system is Scandinavia. Of course, we have to admit Scandinavian system is very competitive. But 100% of the financing goes from the state, so it's still supply-driven system. And most of the European systems are really lagging behind in their capacity to provide more education to those who really want to study. I think I'm just running out of time, so let me show you something which I think is, for the discussion, very important. Three types of systems, the demand liberal systems like United States, Canada, Australia. This is the average, this is the sort of dynamic of the system showing what's the change in the proportion of adults with tertiary education between 1996 and 2001. You can see 21% more achieved tertiary education in this type of countries between these years. Scandinavian model, about 16% more. Traditional European models like Czech Republic, Germany, France, Denmark, I mean these countries, 12% only. This is average of OECD. So I think this is something we really have to be able to discuss and be open-minded to discuss. Why systems which are today open to, let's say, money coming from students, of course, then open to their demand, are much more dynamic than other systems, and what we have to do to open these systems for students. We are testing my computer. Doesn't matter. All right, so basically that's something I want to tell. And these are the questions for debate I think are important. How to improve competitiveness of European university systems? How to increase the number of students to keep up with non-university systems, and the question whether European systems can stay where they are or to be really reformed, and which model, demand-driven with all the consequences or supply-driven, should they follow? These will be my questions before actually we can discuss mobility of students. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Mateu, and now I'll give the floor to chairman of European Democrats Party, which is called European Democrats, Mr. Jan Kassel. Jan.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Hello to everybody. Thanks for being invited. In the contrary to my colleagues, I'm not an expert on education. I'm architect by profession. I was serving as a mayor of the city, and due to efforts of placing Prague on the market of cities, I had to get through how to increase the quality of local economy, municipal economy, and through that I've got to education and knowledge economy and the whole processes which are now leading trends of the modern economy of the 21st century. So let me use the PowerPoint presentation of Mr. Mathieu and say we have to do something before we come to universities. We have to change the system of basic education and secondary education, and then how to deal with students after the process which was described here. So how to link students and graduates to... Sorry, I'm using the other micro so I can stand up. How to use the quality of education, how to use graduates to utilize, to fructify their education they reach through tertiary university education. Going back to grammar school, our, let's call it Austro-Hungarian grammar school is still based on memory, on repeating, on education of volumes. Our pupils are great in memorizing where is the capital of every country all around the world, which date, who married whom, and who won in the battle where. But when it comes to the point, they should stand up and defend their essay, their thesis, their idea. They are usually a bit weaker compared to their the competitors of the same age. After 1989, a lot of Czech kids, teenagers, got a chance to get the United States, main United States, and Western Europe for 1 year of secondary school, of high school studies. They were usually best in mathematics, physics, geography, history, usually not the local one, but the general history. But they definitely couldn't get used to the system where students are seen and treated as individual human beings, self-confident, defending their knowledge, their experience, their ideas. And that's probably the strongest weakness of Czech educational system, and we are still fighting, and I'm sure that Mr. Bartoš, who's the shadow minister for education, have the same idea in mind and wants the same to be changed. Things are changing, but too slowly. The time is running much faster. Secondary education is another, let's say the second, comparing basic education or grammar schools and high schools and higher education. They are still the weak basis for university and tertiary education. How to continue after? I was fighting for 3 years as a mayor of Prague, and after I left my office, I continued in linking Czech Technical University, ČVUT, to research and development, mainly to force academicians to be linked to business, to be linked to, we call it Pragueon, science park, to continue to, let's say, business park and technological cluster. I've got a good example from Lund, from South Sweden. I don't know who is from Sweden here. If somebody, you may know Skåne, your South Sweden region, which is one of the most dynamic regions in not only Europe, in the world, because of the percentage of GDP being invested to research and development, because of links, close links between university, technical institute, and research and development companies, spin-out companies. The incubator there was the place where Ericsson mobile telephone and Bluetooth technology and light pen were invented. It took 3 years to first steps when ČVUT started to think about possibility to maybe doing something similar. Because a lot of professors here are living in their academic life and they have no reason to become business people, they have no reason to become linked to companies, to involve their students to a real production of something real based on their great ideas and great theoretic visions. So this is second weakness. After the process of education, tertiary education, how to implement those educated people to the system. Every summer there are thousands of unemployed university students who do not know exactly what to do and where to go. some of them on purpose. I understand that last holiday is the best holiday, and I can imagine that half a year travels around Europe is another benefit. But many of them really do not know where to be employed, how to be employed, and if you ask them, and I was employing a lot of architects, young architects in my studio before, if you ask them what you know, can you do this, how would you start that, they are usually, it takes them 1 year to get to real praxis, to real practical life. So this is my contribution to the topic. I think that EU integration and student mobility may help a lot in this process. All my kids were studying abroad at least for a semester or year. I'm sure that exchange of environment, teachers, way of thinking, simply the different way of education is very useful, not only because of the knowledge itself, but because of the way how to study, the way how to perceive the world, how to react, how to defend, how to present yourself. So mobility of students is quite important. Of course, traditional universities will, from certain percentage, be serving the local area, but the competition will be higher and higher, and I very much agree with both my predecessors that competition is the issue. Competition of students, universities, professors, countries, that's the issue for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you very much. And now, you have the question now? Will you wait? Will you keep the question for the next 5 minutes? Thanks. Thank you very much. But you will be the first. You'll be the first to ask. Okay. Anyway, now I'll ask the shadow minister for education and possible future real minister of education. Who knows? Only voters. Voters knows. Okay, Mr. Walter Bartosz, to have the speech. Of course. Yes.
Vážení studenti, vážená technická univerzita, jak vás v angličtině přeložili, děkuji za pozvání.
Okay, dear students and Czech Technical University, thank you very much for the invitation for this discussion forum.
Pan moderátor Jakub Železný mě v úvodu představil jako stínového ministra, tím pádem opozičního politika. Já bych si dovolil vám něco říct o debatě, která se vede v politickém spektru o tom, jak by měla vypadat v budoucnu podoba našeho terciárního vzdělávání.
As I was introduced by the moderator as the shadow minister of education, I would like to discuss a little bit with you or to explain the ideas that are discussed at present in the political spectrum in the Czech Republic about the education system. It means what we are discussing right now.
Pokud mluvíme o mobilitě studentů, je třeba k tomu připojit další slovo, které je velice důležité, a to je kompatibilita našeho vzdělávacího systému.
At the moment we speak about the mobility of the students, at the same time we should stress also another important point of view, and this is the compatibility of the students.
A to kompatibilita v užším slova smyslu a kompatibilita v širším slova smyslu.
And we have to speak about the compatibility of the students in the narrow meaning and also in the, say, broader or the wider meaning.
Kompatibilita v užším slova smyslu se nám už skoro povedla, neboť jsme s kolegou Petrem Matějou, ten byl také představen jako bývalý politik, v roce 2001 prosadili novelu vysokoškolského zákona, kde jsme implantovali takzvaný boloňský princip, jinými slovy strukturované studium.
Speaking about the so-called narrow meaning of the student compatibility or the education compatibility, we had already certain success because for the new education law that was approved by the year 2001, so-called Bologna principle was already incorporated in this law. It means this basic principle and the education principle is already the part of our education law.
Já jsem velmi pozorně poslouchal anglický projev pana docenta Želence a vytrhnu z něj jednu větu, kterou použil, když mluvil o univerzitách jako o velmi konzervativním prostředí, tak v souvislosti s tím bych rád řekl, že právě v tom roce 2001 jsme vlastně narazili na největší odpor od vedení univerzit při implantaci toho boloňského systému.
I would like to use one idea from the speech of former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Zelenets, because he said that the universities are among the most conservative institutions within the, say, governmental or the state system. And this was also our experience during the discussion and the approval of the new education law, that the most opponents or the highest opposition came from the universities as a very conservative institutions.
Nicméně to se nám povedlo nakonec prosadit, takže strukturované studium už je u nás legislativně zakotveno v zákonu.
But finally we succeed to incorporate this structural education into the education law, and that was quite a big success for us.
Nicméně kompatibilita není jenom o strukturovaném studiu a o boloňském procesu, což je vlastně o obsahu vzdělávání, ale je to trošku širší pojem, neboť to školství, nebo respektive vzdělávání, je začleněno do nějakého širšího kontextu. Ten kontext je samozřejmě sociální, ten kontext je také ekonomický a je třeba se bavit i o těchto faktorech.
But the compatibility of the students is not only the matter of the Bologna process and the new education law, but it has also the wider consequences. It has the relations to the social structure, economic structure and other influences that could influence the education system.
V oblasti financování vedeme veliké spory v poslanecké sněmovně a vůbec jako na politické scéně o tom, jestli má existovat finanční spoluúčast studentů nebo nemá.
Speaking about the financing, there is a very long and tough discussion about the co-financing of the education from the side of the students. Means the problem if the students should pay certain amount of the money for their education.
Paradoxně ti, kteří nechtějí, aby studenti za studium připláceli, argumentují sociálním aspektem.
Of course there is a very strong argument of the parties that oppose this idea, I mean the financial participation of the students, and this is the social aspect.
Ale právě náš vzdělávací systém, byť je takzvaně bezplatný, což je samozřejmě což není úplně tak samozřejmě pravda, ukazuje, že je velmi silně sociálně selektivní, že právě z těch low income families, z těch rodin, které mají vlastně nízké příjmy, se dostává velice malé procento uchazečů na vysoké školy, jedná se asi o 8% ve srovnání s průměrem OECD, který je někde kolem 32%.
If we go to the social structure of the society, we can say that in the Czech Republic only about 8% of the students from the families with a lower income, it means with the lower social levels, only about 8% of the students came to the tertiary education. The average figure for the European Union is about 30 figures.
A tak před námi jsou dvě možné cesty, jsme na rozcestí. Buď zvolíme skandinávskou cestu, která je bez školného, teď mám na mysli třeba Finsko, to znamená ale velice silně nasypat do vzdělávacího systému veřejných zdrojů a nejsem přesvědčen o tom, že tento zadlužený stát si to teď v této chvíli může dovolit.
We have two ways how to solve this problem. The first system is so-called Scandinavian system. It means the system that is highly supported or heavily supported by the governmental authorities. It needs a lot of public funds and it needs a strong and healthy government, of course.
A nebo máme před sebou takzvanou liberální cestu, a to je cesta, kdy student se bude podílet na financování svého studia, přičemž podpora státu právě studentům z těch nízkopříjmových rodin musí být velmi vysoká.
then we have the second possibility how to solve the problem, and it's a liberal way of the education financing. It means there will be the participation or the co-financing of the education from the side of the students, and only in the case of the families with the lower incomes, there will be involvement and the bigger or the higher support of the state authorities or the government.
Když si ještě vzpomenete na tabulku, kterou tam měl přede mnou pan kolega Matějů, tak na té tabulce se ukazovalo, že my jsme vzdělávací systém, který má velmi nízkou podporu z privátních zdrojů, ale také velmi nízkou podporu studentů, sociální podporu studentů ze strany státu. To by se mělo změnit.
If you remember one of the tables that was presented by Mr. Matthew, my previous speaker, you could see in that table that there is a very low support of the education from the side of the private sources, and on the other side there is also quite a low support from the social side of the government.
Proto připravujeme různé modely sociální podpory. Do těch modelů bychom mohli zařadit například studijní spoření, půjčky studentům na studium, speciální sociální dávky, anebo také možnost takzvané odložené platby, která už úspěšně funguje na Novém Zélandu, v Austrálii a teď by měla začít fungovat také ve Velké Británii, tak jak je popsána v Bílé knize. Od ledna v roce 2006 bude spuštěna reforma také u pana Blaira ve Velké Británii.
At present we are preferring the various systems or the various models how to solve the problem of the education financing. We are preparing the models, for example, for the student loans, means there be loan the loans from the banks for the students with some prolonged payment period. Then we are also preparing the model of the support of the families with the lower incomes. And the similar systems are already working in Australia, and also the Great Britain during the last years are trying to introduce this system into the education system.
Já skončím poslední větou. Pan moderátor Jakub Železný mě představil jako konzervativního politika, tak chci říct, že ve vysokoškolském sektoru jsem se neinspiroval konzervativní stranou ve Velké Británii, ale paradoxně panem Blairem. Ten model se mi velmi líbí a je to momentálně také program mé politické strany, kterou reprezentuji u nás zde v České republice. Děkuji za pozornost.
Yeah, I was introduced by moderator as a conservative politician, but it's not 100% true, because my major inspiration came from Mr. Blair, means I was more not so conservative politician as it was introduced.
Okay, thank you very much for your speech, Mr. Bartosz. And now I would like to say something for the discussion. First of all, let me tell you something about me, why I'm here as a student moderator. I actually spent 6 years here at Czech Technical University dealing with the international students, with the exchange students. And so I'm actually spent a lot of time getting involved in the mobility of the students and so on. I spent one semester in US, so I have also some background to our system, to our university system. And also I was acting in the Erasmus student network as the national representative for the Czech Republic. And there I had this great chance to go for several conferences in the Brussels and so on, to meet the people, like for example Marta Maria Ferreira, which is the head of the Commission for the Education, and to talk about all these topics there. And from my experiences, I actually have some questions about this. You heard about the restructurization, and you heard about the new system of the education, the higher education. It's all done by the experts. I have no doubt about that. But on the other hand, the people who do this things like a Bologna process and this ongoing process after this, they are actually a couple of years from the schools already. And I'm just asking myself, maybe if they are not missing some points, you know, because they are 40 or 50 years old or something, and even though they are really the experts, they might be missing some points, and that's why we need you here, and that's why we need you to discuss, because it's you who are actually students who are involved in all this and who are actually involved in this restructurization. I would like to know if it was easy for you to go for the exchange, if the mobility which we are talking here is easy or not from your point of view. We would like to know your ideas and feels about it. So this is something I would like to say for the discussion. Don't worry to tell us your ideas, because we are really ready for that. And I'm sure that our guests here, they are a proof of that, that your ideas will not be lost, because our guests are really influential people, if I can say it, maybe. And so it means that your ideas may not be lost, and they could be used for a better system. Okay, so thank you very much, and I would like to open the discussion.
I know about you, of course, but just before first question, let me apologize to one very important person who unfortunately couldn't be here today. It's head of Czech Technical University, Professor Jiří Vicany. He unfortunately is not here. He wanted to join this meeting very much, but he has a very important negotiations in Hlávka's Foundation at this moment, so he's apologizing. Or on behalf of him, I'm apologizing him, and I want to say hello also from head of Czech Technical University. Well, this was a little apologize, and now the discussion, please. Or maybe, are you very tired? No? Okay, let's continue, because we just wanted to know when to do a little break. I think we'll hear some questions, and then maybe we'll do a little break, and then we'll continue. Okay, fine. First floor is yours. First question is yours. Just wait for microphone, if possible. Thank you, and please introduce yourself, if possible. Thanks.
Well, I'd be glad to, Jacob. My name is Mads Vanderklink, and I'm from Aalborg University, Denmark, which also is a part of the EICU, the European Consortium of Innovative Universities. A consortium was formed before any university became innovative. Now they are. But my question, and if I may, Mr. Minchao, sorry, Matteo.
Pierre.
Thanks. I'd like to correct you. In Denmark, we see ourselves as Scandinavian, and we have the Scandinavian model. But my question to you is, couldn't we encourage a larger degree of regionalization of the universities, where they have a larger degree of regional responsibility regarding innovation, researchers' parks, for instance, and also to ease the link between the secondary and the tertiary? The secondary and the tertiary education. In that way, that we can have some areas in the region where the university, it doesn't have to be small and national or international of that. Small regional universities as my own, in that way to spread out the research and spread out to the small regions. I know that you have some problems in Czechia, of course, and Czech Republic as well. And my other question is regarding to the student mobility, because we're all talking about it and it'd be nice, and some says it's just a question about money, but the planning of the education should be more, as for instance one of the programs in ECIU is a joint master program where the master is placed with semesters in different universities, especially also integrating America and integrating Asia. So, and we should say Asia more, because they're also jumping up. We saw Korea was quite up there too as well. So perhaps it's a question of planning the education to encourage the crowd out, the students. Thank you.
Quite many of the questions, right? So let me start by the first, I think, logically the first one, and that's the link between secondary and tertiary education. I think this is really crucial. If you look at most of the European systems of education, the problem really starts at the secondary level, because it's highly stratified. If you compare European educational system with, for example, you know, American or Canadian, Australian, most of the kids go through general education up until their age of 18. And then they decide what to do. They either follow university track or college or really tiny layer of those who are not capable enough end up at the labor market. Now, in the European territory, about 30%, especially in this country, 35% of kids go through vocational track. For them, the only future is the labor market. They have no chance to go on because they do not receive diploma you definitely need to go on to study further at the university level, right? The rest, about 60%, they are both, they are tracked either to technical or general. Again, those who go through the technical track have a lower chance to get to the university level because they are not prepared for university education. So, if I am the Minister of Education in such a small country as we are, I would definitely immediately start the reform of the secondary education, right? To open the higher levels for anyone who may find in the later age, 16, 17, 18, he or she is capable enough to study. Because if they are tracked at age of 11, who decides for them? Parents. Parents. So the class barriers reproduce from generation to generation. All right? And that's the role, this was your second question, the role of regional universities or regional small colleges or whatever. I think this is exactly, it's very, you know, controversial issue as it used to be in the United States 20 years ago. Are these schools designed for working class families and their kids or not? I would say yes. Yes, they are, for a very simple reason. These kids usually do not have strong motivation to jump directly to university. So, but if they start at the lower level of tertiary education and gradually develop, you know, competitive skills, you know, motivation, whatever, then they can jump to the university level. So, of course, Americans, they say, this is diverted dream. Yes, still better to have diverted dream and then go back than to end up in the dead end track, which is the case here, right? So I would say it's a big problem to reform university systems, but you are right. We first have to begin our reforms at the secondary level.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other question from there? It's okay. Okay. So then we have another question over there, and then you okay?
It's switched on. Let's first introduce myself. I'm Christian Schuiling. I'm from the Delft University of Technology from the Netherlands. And when I heard the four speakers, it seems they are thinking about some kind of education heaven in the United States. I think that's not the case. It really is not. All the levels in the United States are different. There are four or five, six top universities. Rest of universities, well, it's not crap, but it's far below them. It's not that anyone can join MIT. Of course not. Only the best can, and only the ones with the most money can. So it doesn't open the system, the lower social levels, stay at the lower universities, which are not that important. They ask you, where did you get your engineering diploma? Ah, if it's not a very famous university, well, sorry. MIT, wow, that's something. But only 13,000 students can study at MIT. Only 13,000. There are four or five other top technical universities. That's not that much. That's very few people. So what we're having here in Europe may be demand-driven and driven by the government. With government money, that supports the low social level in form of in following education, not only investing in yourself. You need support from elsewhere. And that's the only possibility for someone who doesn't have the money to pay his own study at MIT. And to give you an idea of the money there, a technical university in Delft is one of the best technical universities of Holland. It's quite famous in Europe, somehow. But MIT is at the same size of Delft, and they have more than 10 times the budget that we got. Of course you get a good university. That's quite easy. Everybody can with that money. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your emotional question. May I also have one question to you? Which American universities you think are not the crap? As you said, you think MIT, Yale, Harvard, Princeton, Berkeley, Stanford, that's all?
Well, there are more of them, of course, but a lot of them is not the devil. Okay, fine. Most of them is not the devil.
Well, thank you for your emotional question. Thank you very much.
If I can comment the last words. Sure, there are a lot of American universities of very low quality. You know it. Among thousands of universities, you can find a lot of bad universities. But what is our problem is that universities are not only institutions for established for social purposes, but also for efficiency of the society, efficiency of the state, efficiency of the economy. This is primary objective. And I think you are not right if you speak only about MIT. If you take 10 best universities in the world, according the standards, research, quality of education, and various others criteria. If you take 10 best in the world, you can find 8 American inside. If you can take 20, you can find 15 Americans. If you take 50, you can find 40 American universities. If you take 200, you can find 120, I think. I am not specialist on the current data. I work in the field before I entered politics, so I remember data from beginning of 90s. But this is the issue. The general quality production of specialists for society, for efficiency of society, is much better. I don't want to implant American system here. I think we should look the ways which could put together our tradition, including what you mentioned, with the efficiency, and we should think about it. We cannot refuse to accept their successes and simply to say we don't play this game, because this game is global game, and if we don't accept the rules, we could lose a lot in the other fields of the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You want
to add something? Yes. I keep hearing these comments very often when we compare
American and European universities. And let me tell you, I'm not comparing individual universities. And I know that actually Netherlands is one of the best systems, I mean university systems in Europe. But what we are comparing are the systems. And you said you need state money. You need actually supply-driven system to provide education for the lower social strata. You said basically, if I'm not mistaken, you said that basically European systems are better suited for those who come from working class families to get to into the higher education. Am I right? Did you say that? Okay. I have an evidence which shows you are not right. Look, these are OECD data from 2001. We don't have the data from most recent years. This is the state subsidy to students. This is what the students get from the state in percentage of total expenditures to tertiary education, right? Here you have share of private resources. What does it mean? To what extent tuition contributes to the expenditures on tertiary education, right? So the more students pay, the country will be shifted towards this end. The less students pay, if nothing, they will be here, okay? So this is the meaning of the two axes. So clearly you can find three systems of tertiary education. As I already mentioned, it type one, Canada, Australia, United States. Students pay a lot. At the same time, students get a lot. Those who cannot pay, they get. Those who can pay, they pay. Scandinavian system, it's a paradise. Students do not pay anything, get a lot. Can we afford it? If we can, I would definitely opt for this system. Now, most of the European systems are here. Students don't pay anything, or very low, no tuition at all, but they are not supported by the state at all. What's the consequence? As Mr. Bartos already said, in most of the European nations, inequality in access to higher education, that is the barrier for lower social strata, is much higher here than here. You may not believe me, but if you look at the OECD data, here it is. These are the proportions of working class kids who attain tertiary education. Liberal, United States, Canada, and Australia, 34%, 23% Scandinavia. And these are our nice countries in the center of Europe. Only 9% of kids from working class origin get tertiary education. Now, what's the development? The green is liberal, blue is Scandinavia, and this is our central Europe. And this is inequality in access to higher education in historical perspective. Older cohorts, younger cohorts. This is the development in Scandinavia and liberal countries. They can compete to each other. And this is development in Europe. We are getting worse and worse. So you are not right saying that you need supply-driven system to support kids from lower social strata to get it.
Thank you, Dr. Mathieu, very much. Additional question, of course. Yes, thanks.
Wow. I'm not completely informed with the Central Europe system. So maybe you're right. But the one point I want to make extra clear is that you're talking about tertiary education. But tertiary education is here on a more standard level than it is in the United States, for example. So getting tertiary education doesn't... Well, then you're not exactly immediately sure of the same income, of the same jobs. So what is the difference then? I don't think I'm really clear. I mean that the well, the skills in the United States, the universities are very different. You get very low and very high. You're talking about 200 top universities, 100 of the United States. Maybe that's right, but that's still the top. And there's a lot of tertiary education, which costs a lot of money. They're paid a lot of money, but the education is not of a good quality. So you're not doing well in that system. I think that's my point. Thank you.
Sure that Delft University has a very proud student in you. Okay, do you want to add something to this issue, actually? Because this young man should speak now, then the other young man in the gray t-shirt. You are a lady, so if you want to say something very actual now, I'll give you the floor. Okay, so do you want to comment now something? Will you wait, young gentleman in the second row, will you wait for a minute? Okay, so the lady, please. No, the lady there, please. Té dámě tam mikrofon. Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Orsia Janosi, and I'm from the University of Debrecen, Hungary. I think I have just one question concerning the education in the US, or how do we define the quality of a university in general? Because I know the top 100 list, and there's one Hungarian university which is Szeged, because in the 1930s Albert Szentgyörgyi got the Nobel Prize. So that's why he's on the, I mean, Szeged is on the list. So what does a good university mean? High quality tertiary education mean? Because from the student point of view, I'm not sure that Szeged is such a good university. So, and back to the US system, I have one more comment. And if I understand right, if you see the quality of secondary education in Europe, it is much more different from the quality of secondary education in the US. So in many colleges in the United States, students learn the same as we do in secondary schools. So what is the quality? That's my last question.
Köszönöm. Thank you very much for your question. Gentlemen, who will answer? Mr. Bartosz? Yes.
Můžu? Takhle. Já zkusím zareagovat na jednu otázku, která je velice zajímavá, a to je kvalita vzdělávání. Kvalita vzdělávání.
Let me react on one question that is very interesting for me, and this is the quality of the education.
Sadím se se všema, co zde sedíte, že kdybyste každý dostali bílý papír a měli napsat, co to je kvalita vzdělávání, tak každý to napíšete úplně jinak.
I'm quite sure that if every person in this room will receive the piece of the white paper and the pen, and you should explain what is the quality education, probably every person will explain different point of view on this issue.
Kvalita vzdělávání je totiž velmi subjektivní pojem a je spojen se vnímáním toho daného subjektu, který vlastně to vzdělávání momentálně získává. Takže je to velmi, velmi různorodé a slovo kvalita já používám velmi opatrně.
Of course, the quality of the education is a very variable term, and it will always depend on the standpoint or the point of view of the each individual, each person. It's quite difficult to define the quality of the education.
A protože vzdělání chápu jako veřejnou službu občanovi, a teď můžeme vést debatu v terciární oblasti, nakolik je to soukromý statek a nakolik je to statek veřejný. Nicméně v každém případě je to služba občanovi, tak by občan měl být ten, který vlastně jakýmsi způsobem tu kvalitu posuzuje a také by mu nemělo být bráněno studovat vysokou školu tak, jak je to v těch uzavřených systémech, protože on vlastně by tu službu měl využívat.
I understand the education as a public service to the inhabitants or to the people of the each country. It means I feel it as a public service, and because this is a public service, there should be minimum or no obstacles for each individual in the country to get the education.
A proto také nemám problém s tím, že mohou být velmi různorodé výstupy z vysokých škol. Kolega z Dalské univerzity mluvil o americkém systému, který je velmi různorodý, že jsou tam školy s takzvanou vysokou kvalitou a nízkou kvalitou. Já s tím nemám problém, život je velmi složitý a na tom trhu si pak budou ty firmy vybírat z těch univerzit, o kterých jsou přesvědčeni, že jsou dobré nebo nejsou ty výstupy z těch vysokých škol.
And as it was explained by our friend from the Netherlands, on the market of course we can find a lot of universities with the different various levels of the education or the quality of education, and I still feel that the market demand will find and the people will find the corresponding university that will suit their needs for the education.
A pokud někdo chce studovat na škole, která obecně není považována za příliš kvalitní a je ochoten si to zaplatit, neměla by existovat síla, která mu v tom bude bránit. Prostě je to jeho zájem, on se chce takhle vzdělávat. To je moje představa. Náš vzdělávací systém bohužel toto v současné době neumožňuje, je příliš selektivní a ukončím to své vystoupení, že byť nejsem žádným obdivovatelem amerického vzdělávacího systému, tak jedna věc se mě na něm líbí, že přestal být elitářský. Na rozdíl od Evropy, prostě kdo chce studovat, ten studuje. U nás je to pořád ještě problém, jak ukazoval pan kolega Matějov na grafech.
What I appreciate on the American education system, that this is not the system of the elites, it means it's not elitic system just for the elite, but the system is available for everybody. In comparison with this, in Europe, still we have a certain limits of the in the within the education system that limit the availability of the education for everybody, for every person of the country. Either financial or whatever.
Okay, well, we'll hope after the elections Mr. Kassel
wants to comment something, and then Mr. Mathieu, yes, and then you. Thank you for your patience.
Thanks. I think the question of quality is the right question. What the best way of spending 4, 5, 6 years at the university? Is it a good life, good environment, or the ability to enroll on the job market immediately to the best possible company with the highest available income, let's say in the shortest period? And understand that the answer is not so simple, because you can be a archaeologist and you simply will go to Egypt for 5 years and you will discover something and you will be not the best paid scientist, and you can be somebody who invented something very simple, small, what can be sold on a market for the high price. But the criteria is really important, and I fully understand what my predecessor said here about Czech system and the efficiency of the system and the ability to compete with other systems. I have plenty of friends studying at Delft University, plenty of friends who left the country before 89, of course, who are studying there, and they were very much satisfied with the education, with the quality of education there. At the same time, I have half of my family abroad in the United States, and some of them were studying at US universities, and they are on the top of in their field of activity. But I wanted just to comment one thing, which is the let's say grouping or regrouping of universities and countries. If I'm not mistaken, and Peter Mathieu will correct me, Canada is spending 2.5% of GDP from public money
in terms of, let's say, subsidizing or pouring money from the public sources, 2.5% of GDP, plus 1.5% of private sources, which is four together, the highest number, the highest volume all around the world. And they are in the group where the Czech Republic or our countries would definitely like to be. The volume of money spent from public sources here is not sufficient, and we have no sources, or there are very limited possibilities how to pour private money, not only from tuition fee, but from company money, those really demand-driven money based on we need students, we need graduates, so we pour money into the system. And this must be changed.
Right. Quality of education. What is interesting on these debates, every time we start talking about how to reform our systems, we end up in discussion of quality. Right. I would say that there is one really objective and strong criterion of quality of education and its success of the student or on the labor market. Why you study? Of course, you like to study, it's nice, but you expect better job, better income, I would say more enjoyable life. Now, what has changed on the labor markets in most competitive countries? It's not really sufficient to have fixed, I would say, package of skills. It used to be sufficient 30, 40 years ago. Now you should be really flexible. This is the must of the individual competitiveness on the labor market. Now, what's the difference between a student of a secondary school in Europe who, as you rightly say, very often gets basically the same, I would say, package of information as American student at the community college? The biggest difference between these two students is capacity to use information to solve the problem. At the secondary level, kids are really trained to remember a package of information. They cannot use it. Students at the tertiary level are very often forced to discuss, to combine information, to use it. So that's why even the student from a community college very often succeeds on the labor market better than students from secondary school. It looks like that I am for some reasons defending American system. No, I'm just trying to as Mr. Zelenets did, to find our deficiencies, our deficits, our problems, to improve the system, which does not necessarily mean bringing American system over here. No, we have to learn what's good there, how to bring it over here, and how to compete. That's all.
I'm sure that you are waiting for a long time. So if you want to ask the question.
Okay. I am from...
Sorry, just for one second. And it will be, if you will agree, it will be the last question before a short break. Oh, you want to say something very important. Okay, you and then you. And then I think you are a little bit tired, aren't you? A little bit. There's a lot of water. There's a lot of water there on the table. So I think one question, one short comment, please. Thank you very much. And then a little break. Okay, you agree? Thank you very much. Please.
Okay. I come from Italy, and I would bring the discussion a little bit here in Europe. You know that we have, all the nations in Europe have ancient roots from an economic and cultural point of view. And the main problem, I think, and we think in my university, is that when, for example, a student goes in Erasmus, as you were saying before, the aim of going in Erasmus isn't to understand another culture, to work with other people, because we are full of our history. I have a lot of traditions, I have a lot of things. So I'm not looking for to understand something else. I'm just going there to, as you say, know another culture. It doesn't mean anything. I'm going there to know some people, have some parties. Maybe I will understand how to cook something I didn't know. But this is nothing. I mean, this is not the point to build a strong Europe together. You are, I mean, you know how people act and think, should give us some structure to make students work together, not be together. We are full of this being together, of this party and buses and tour of Prague. We are not here to visit Prague. We are here to build in Europe all together. If we continue with this program of city tour and then disco parties, this is okay for... Maybe this was okay in another period when our culture were a little bit more primitive, but not now. Now we need something to work together. And work doesn't mean to know other people. Means to know how they face and cope with problems, the same problems we have in every nation, because we have to understand, and you should make the student understand that the only way to compete with USA, with other things, is to create a unique nation. And the strongest point of the unique nation is the differences in the cultures and the differences in the histories, because we are better than them, because we have a lot of cultural things in our mind. And I'm finishing. You before spoke about the link between students and companies. You know that the money aren't a lot when we speak about research. And we have a lot of companies in Italy that are paying the university to make some particular courses that are focused on what they need. In this way, we risk to have courses and exams that will let the nations of Europe going always far from them. Because if I study something to solve problems to Fiat, to my company in Italy, and you study something to solve something in here, we'll get very far. Our university will be particular and we'll never get in contact, because I will be the perfect engineer solving problems for my company, but I will never understand your kind of problem. So I don't think it's a good idea to involve the companies and the money of the companies inside extraction. And of course, we are quite far from the world of the job. As you said, you need to take your students with a degree and to teach them how to work, because the university is quite far and we have all these teachers speaking about the nothing each time. But if you apply your method, and in my office, my engineer applies another method, we will never be able to speak together. So let's stop to organize this Erasmus, and let's organize the same thing but working together. But working means people as you that should work with my colleagues and vice versa.
For your question, but maybe your question should be asked to some university authorities next time. And didn't it mean that you didn't like the guide city guide tour from Prague? I hope so. Well, but anyway, thank you very much for your question. And I will ask gentlemen, Mr. Zelenets, please.
The last problem is one of the crucial here. I think in our the whole European higher education. Because we understand, the reform of European universities is needed, but it's very difficult to even to start because of the conservative character of these institutions. But on the other side, what is possible, you precisely mentioned, to start to work together. I think that if there is a role of the European Union here, it should start the European level of higher education outside of national systems, where people from Europe, professors on one side and students on the other side, in the system which is not traditional in the every member state's sense of the word, it could be green grass project based on the, it would be European project, not American type project, but based on the rules which could be oriented on the work together, efficiency in research, in education, in global competition. I think it's the only way how to give the new dynamics to the European higher education, not via reforms, because we can speak about reforms. We will speak about reforms for 20 years. It's very difficult even to start, but maybe we should press our governments to reform. Politicians should do it, but I think we should also provide mirror for the national universities to show the high standard, a really center of excellence of European, pan-European level. If we want to think about efficiency of money, if to put some money into European programs for mobility and, as you say, only meetings, or if you think about additional money for national universities here in Germany, in France, I think the €1 which we spent in such university would be much, much better used than €10 in all other projects which we can to which we can orient our money. Let's hope that European Union understands that if it has some role, it's the role to provide this type of center of excellence for the European higher education. Thank you.
Thank you. Last comment, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Tomáš Černé, University of Ljubljana, Slovenia. Shanghai rank, the most famous, is based on Nobel Prizes. Smart human being who will get this prize regardless he studies at MIT or Mickey Mouse, because he is better than all the teachers, and the university, on my opinion, don't play the role here. So why are between 100 top universities 80 from the United States? I have the answer. Because the best students from Asia and from Europe study there. The best studies, all the students, the best are there. And let's face it, it's all about money and marketing. Yes. And what now? We have Lisbonia Declaration. This there's written that Europe will be a knowledge-based society, will be the most concurrence area in the world. To achieve this goal will be provided extensive, I repeat, extensive financial support. And what is the reality? Where is this extensive financial support? Thank you.
Thank you for your comment or note. Do you want to react, gentlemen? Any one of you? Or does it mean that you agree? Dr. Mathieu, please.
I remember this spring, as I already mentioned it, I was at the discussion with students about financing higher education. And I understood that, of course, all of you and all of them, if you were politicians at this age, you would definitely pour all available money to educational system. Now let's meet some 40 years from now when you face problems with your health and with your pension. Then I ask you again, where you pour all the money which are available? And you would say, well, to the healthcare system and to the pension system. So this is a reaction to your comment. We should be fair, saying, well, all these systems, healthcare system, pension system, educational system, all these systems now require enormous money. Now we have to think about how to make people, first of all, responsible, and second, contributing to this system to make it work. Otherwise, we won't be, this is my divorce prediction, the war between generations,
we have to find the balance. Why students should not contribute something, why pensioners should not contribute more to their pensions, and why those who are sick should not benefit from their previous contributions to the system. It's something we have to think about.
Just a little last comment before the break, the smallest one. I just didn't want that you feel like treated as it was not fully fair comment of Peter Mathieu. I think the Armanevich should be invested, spent in educational system itself. If you look to budget of every country in Europe, not only Europe, you will find 10% of waste money, you will find 15% of corrupt money spent on public procurements. Mainly in former communist countries, we know something about, but it's not much better in Italy and Greece and other countries. So there are money to be spent in education.
Okay, thank you very much. Please keep your ideas and keep your questions for a second part. Now we're going to have a short break. Let's say we'll start again at 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, okay? So it's about 12 minutes. Over there, there is a fresh water. The toilets, they are around the corner. Just go through the doors and then on your right side. And please be on time at 4 o'clock back. Thank you very much.